Chapter 9, The Source of the Source Field. Ancient human civilization may have been far more advanced than we normally believe. Our ancestors made an incredibly strong effort to get us to study the 25,920-year cycle known as the precession of the equinoxes, which was historically broken down into 12 2,160-year ages of the zodiac. The Great Pyramid of Giza also appears to have been built to alert us to this 25,920-year cycle when we measured the exact length of the diagonals in pyramid inches. The craftsmanship of the Great Pyramid is well beyond our current technological capabilities, particularly when we consider the mirror-polished white limestone casing stones that once adorned the outside. And we now know the American founding fathers combined the symbolism of the return of the capstone with mysterious passages from the Sibylline prophecies that foretold a coming golden age. These prophecies strongly indicated that we would again co-mingle with the gods as the great year comes to an end, and in fact gain such supernatural abilities on our own, so that the Golden One shall arise again in the whole earth. If we want to take the Russian discoveries seriously, we would naturally assume that equally stunning effects on matter, energy, biology, and consciousness should be achievable without any pyramids being involved. We've already explored the source field as a living, thinking form of consciousness, suggesting that we have to significantly broaden our ideas of what life really is. We share thoughts with all living things and may well continue to experience awareness while our bodies are clinically brain dead. In this chapter, we're going to begin exploring the biological aspects of the source field in much greater detail. In part 2, we'll move into the deeper mysteries of space and time that underlie the pyramid effects and their influence on physical matter. A wealth of little-known scientific data reveals the unique biological properties of the source field. A good place to start is with German scientist Hans Dreich in 1891. Dreich was examining the sea urchin, which is a unique organism in the sense that it has vegetative cells that look and behave exactly like plants do, as well as animal cells. In the earliest stages of development, the sea urchin embryo is nothing more than a hollow sphere. The vegetative cells are on the bottom half of the embryo, more or less, and the animal cells are on top. Once the embryo develops a little more, the vegetative cells roll inside and form a pocket, which becomes the gut, and the animal cells remain on the outside. In 1891, Dreich discovered that if he separated the very first two cells of a sea urchin embryo, each one produced a whole new embryo, rather than just growing into a deformed half-creature. At the time, this was considered quite a shocking and unexpected discovery. Furthermore, Dreich found he could cut the early sphere-shaped embryo into as many as 8 different pieces, and each of them would grow into a fully new embryo, even if the piece he cut out was from 100% vegetative cells with no apparent animal characteristics whatsoever. Most people would think nothing of these observations in today's world. We automatically assume that each DNA molecule has all the building codes for an organism, so you can grow a whole new life form out of a single cell. Bear in mind that this is one explanation, but it is not the only one, and it may not even be the right one. Dreich believed there was an overall guiding force that determined the growth of any one cell within an embryo. The force contains information that gives each cell instructions on what it should do, depending on where that cell is located. The force is what tells a cell whether it should become a vegetable cell or an animal cell, in the case of the sea urchin. Dreich published his key paper in 1912, and this inspired Alexander Gurvitch, a Russian scientist, to continue this research. Gurvitch believed these energy fields were not only found within the embryo, they governed and regulated the growth of fully adult life forms as well. Gurvitch also believed that all organisms were being kept alive by this mitogenetic energy field, and that they both absorbed and radiated these fields throughout their life cycle. Gurvitch explored the radiant aspect of these fields by using a growing onion. He assumed the majority of life energy would shoot out from the top of a newly sprouting onion, since that's where all the new leaves are growing. Gurvitch thus aimed the top of a sprouting onion at the side of another onion without ever actually letting them touch. Sure enough, those cells on the second onion grew much faster than the rest, forming a noticeable bump where the first onion was pointing. Interestingly, Gurvitch also found that the effect could be completely blocked by putting a piece of glass in the way, which shields infrared and ultraviolet light. However, a piece of quartz did not block the effect, and quartz allows infrared and ultraviolet to pass through. So we don't need pyramid power to get a sudden growth spurt after all. Just the life force of the onion itself is enough to have an effect on other onion cells. Gurvitch published his key paper in 1926. By this time, he had conducted several other experiments that proved a very weak but measurable ultraviolet radiation was emanating from the tip of the onion, creating his mitogenetic effect. Again, it appears that this ultraviolet light is a signature of the source field, but is not the actual source field itself. Much like the ripple in the surface of a lake from a stone you just dropped in is not the stone itself. Many Russian scientists replicated Gurvitch's classic experiment with positive results over the years, though this intriguing research got washed away in the excited speculation that genes and DNA were responsible for all the codes that build living organisms and determine their growth.